Four decades ago, Corey Satterfield arrived on campus as a heralded right-handed pitcher from South Jersey. Recruited by Cal Kuntz, a member of the 1969 Amazing Mets, and later coached by 1982 Cy Young runner-up Mike Caldwell, Corey endured a career capped by leading the Camels to their first Big South baseball title in 1988 and earning all-conference and all-tournament honors along the way. 37 years since he graduated, his name is still etched in the Campbell record books. He's still ranked among the program's top five all-time leaders in wins, starts, complete games, innings pitched, and strikeouts. Drafted by the St. Louis Cardinals in 1988, Corey played three seasons in the minors, earning Midwest League All-Star honors in 1989. After his playing career ended, Corey began a teaching career in Harnett County and later Richmond County. He was twice honored as Principal of the Year and later served as Assistant Superintendent and Interim Superintendent of Scotland County Schools. After retiring from his administrative duties, he was elected to the Richmond County Board of Education in 2022 and continues to serve that organization. In addition to playing golf whenever he can, Corey is now also a member of the Athletic Directors Advisory Board at his alma mater. My name is Stan Cole, class of 1987, and this is our next installment of Tales from the Creek, where we visit with the people who've made this place special over the years. I'm delighted to be joined today by former Campbell baseball standout Corey Satterfield. Welcome to Tales from the Creek, Corey, and thanks for taking the time to visit with us.
Thanks, Stan. It's an honor to be here.
Corey, I'd just like to start out at the beginning. Tell us how all this began. What was it like growing up in South Jersey, the Philadelphia suburbs, and how you got started playing sports?
Yeah, we moved to South Jersey when I was in the second grade from North Jersey. That's a big difference going from a kind of a New York metropolitan area to a Philadelphia area. And had a brother, he was 4 years older than me, and dad coached my brother, and I was always a tag along and just tagged along with my brother and my dad. And dad always put me on team, and I never played, but always practiced with him, had a ball. Moved to South Jersey and kind of developed my own persona with baseball. I remember pitching my first game when I was 6 years old, and it was great. And from then, it just kept on going into Little League baseball, Babe Ruth baseball. We didn't have Legion up there. We had senior Babe Ruth. So senior Babe Ruth in high school. And it was a fantastic ride. I always loved baseball. I would be out in the yard playing baseball with my dad every day. He wouldn't be able to get home in time. And I'd say, Dad, let's go play catch. Let's go hit the ball. Let's do something. And being up in New Jersey, stick ball was a big thing.
Wow.
So we would go outside and throw baseball against the garage, and he'd pitch and I'd hit, or I'd pitch and he'd hit. And it was a really good time growing up playing baseball.
So favorite teams, favorite players?
Great, great question. It's definitely the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm.
And a big reason why I'm at Campbell University today and 4 years and 40 years ago was Cal Kuntz recruited me. And when he showed up at my house with that big old 1969 New York Mets ring, it stole my heart. Didn't even know what Campbell University was about. Had no idea where it was. Didn't know North Carolina. Didn't know Buies Creek. Didn't know Benson. And he sat at that table after watching me pitch, and it just kind of felt like that's my home.
I always like to ask the question of who were you in the yard, or who were you in the driveway? Were you Tom Seaver pitching for the Mets, or who was your guy?
Tom Seaver was my man.
Right.
Loved him. They auctioned a ball here one night 30 years ago. Tom Seaver, Hall of Fame ball. And I looked at my dad and said, we're buying that thing tonight. And we have it. It's still in my living room. Funny story about the New York Mets. I'm probably 8 years old, and I see in the paper that Bud Harrelson is going to be at a place called Rickles. Mm-hmm. That's kind of the hardware store up north. And I begged my dad. I said, Dad, can we go? Can we just go get Bud Harrelson's autograph? You know, Bud Harrelson, great shortstop, mm-hmm. fight with Pete Rose.
Absolutely.
You know, so we get there, and Dad looks at me and says, Corey, this line's really long. So we waited in line for 2 hours.
Wow.
We get up to Bud Harrelson. I'm so excited. He looks at me and he says, hey, who's your favorite New York Met? I looked at him and said, Cleon Jones. My dad wanted to smack me in the back of the head. So, but Bud, great, laughed at it, signed his autograph, and I still have that autograph today.
Cleon Jones, of course, another player like Ricky Henderson, threw left, batted right. That's one of my Wes Parker for the Dodgers back in the 60s and 70s. That's one of my baseball things that I have to always wonder about how that turned out. But my question for a Mets fan, how did you survive in Phillies country, especially after you had moved down there, Carlton, Schmidt, and then later on in the 70s when Rose and Perez and Morgan were there? How did a Mets fan survive in Phillies Nation?
You never wore Mets stuff to Veterans Stadium. You never did. It's just like now. All my friends are Atlanta Braves fans, and I was a New York Mets fan when I was a kid. I was a Mets fan, and all my friends were Philadelphia Philly fans. You just take the ribbon, and then but when they're good, which the Mets weren't really that good back then until about 84, 85, you let them have it when you can let them have it.
Right.
But then you got to take it and take it all. Same with the Braves back in the 90s. Glavin, Maddox, Chipper Jones. You know, the Mets are terrible, and all my friends are just giving it to me. And all my friends, I've told my kids they're not allowed to be Braves fans. They have to be Mets fans. So we're all Mets fans at my house.
So I'm curious, Tom Seaver was your idol. Were you the drop and drive kind of pitcher younger on? Did you look at his form or just kind of develop your own?
I developed my own. I had a high leg kick where, Tom, I had a decent leg kick, but he was more of a drop and drive guy. I was a high leg kick, skinny, 6'5", trying to throw everything at you. Mm-hmm. Where he was really compact and just dropped and threw the mess out of the ball. Mm-hmm. He was just a pitcher that I always looked up to. Him, Jerry Kuzman, remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Love watching Steve Carlton pitch.
Right.
And then today's society, I love Greg Maddux. And I hate the Braves. But I love the way Greg Maddux threw. Up, down, in, out, changes speeds, not afraid to go up under your chin. Not afraid to nibble off the corner, even if he got to a three ball count, which was rare. But just the guts of Tom Seaver and just the way Greg Maddux pitched, those are my two all-time favorite pitchers.
New Jersey, also a hotbed for the sport of soccer in this country, with the population that had immigrated, generations ago from Europe and later, so much. So tell us a little bit about, you played soccer in high school as well. How'd you get started in soccer and avoid the football, basketball, baseball, which kind of followed a lot of other and some of your college teammates?
I was 8 years old, just moved to Willingboro, New Jersey. And I met my best friend, still my best friends today, Scott Essex. Mm-hmm. And him and his dad coached soccer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at his house playing one day, and he lived right down the street from me. And he said, I gotta go to soccer practice. And I said, what's soccer? He said, why don't you come with me? And I called mom on the phone, and I said, Mom, I'm going with Mr. Essex and Scott to play soccer. She said, okay, have fun. And went there, and he asked who wanted to be goalie, and that's the only position that could catch a ball, and I wanted to catch a ball. And from there, it started, and played travel soccer all throughout high school, played high school soccer, and then had to make the decision if I wanted to play soccer or baseball. And, of course, I always knew it was going to be baseball.
Besides school and sports, anything else that you did in your youth, or did they kind of fill up your things? Do you have any interesting part-time jobs or stuff like that? Or
My mom and dad owned a auto mechanic store. My dad was head mechanic, and my brother was the mechanic. And mom and dad always told me, as long as I played sports, which was very busy in my life, mm-hmm. I played all the time, I didn't have to work.
Okay.
So I played soccer and baseball, played travel soccer. I played senior Babe Ruth baseball. So from the time it was time to go back to school to the time it was to go back to school again, I was playing either soccer or baseball. And the one thing I regret is never learning how to fix a car.
Oh, wow.
Because dad would always say, hey, Corey, come on, let's go down to the shop and let's change your oil and change your tires and let's do all this stuff and teach you.
Mm-hmm.
And I never took the opportunity, and now I'm paying for it today. Like that, now I have to go get my car serviced.
Absolutely. You mentioned your dad, Ken. He helped you become a Mets fan, right?
Mom and dad were both Mets fans.
So did they grow up Giants or Dodgers fans, I'm asking, because you were born in Queens.
I was born in Flushing.
Flushing, yeah.
Mom and dad were born, they were raised in Bayside, which is right in Queens.
Right.
I just know them as Met fans.
How about that?
Mets and Jets fans. I remember going to Shea Stadium and watching Joe Namath play when I was like 6 years old against a Baltimore Colts.
Mm-hmm.
I remember that because they used to play football at Shea Stadium.
Right.
They loved the Mets. My mom's favorite player was Gary Carter.
How about that?
Loved Gary Carter. And we just had great times going to Met games. I remember we went to the 86 World Series. I got a good story about Cal Kuntz and 86 and the 86 Mets. So we're in a Taylor Field shagging fly balls and mm-hmm. practice in the fall. Myself and Kenny Milton are out there. Mm-hmm. And I had the old Walkman headphones on because they're playing the Houston Astros in game 6 of the National League Championship Series.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's when they're down 3-0. They score 3 runs in the 9th, and then they win in 16 innings. So they don't have to face Mike Scott, if you remember that.
Right.
So we're jumping up and down in the outfield that they've tied the game. Well, practice gets over. I run back to the dorm. I think I lived in Murray, and watched the end of that game, and the Mets win. Next day at practice, I have to ask Kuntz if I can leave, because I had tickets to game 1 and game 2 up in New York to go to see the Mets and Red Sox. And if it was anybody else but the Mets, you know what Kuntz is saying. No, you're not going. You're practicing here.
Mm-hmm.
He let me leave, and I went and saw the first 2 games of the 86 World Series, which was awesome. They lost both.
Well, the interesting thing, some of our listeners may or may not know, Cal Kuntz was a junior college All-American pitcher here at Campbell. Later had a 10-year career in the big leagues with the Cubs, the Mets, where he was a member of that 1969 World Series championship team before finishing up with the Red Sox. So maybe if it had been you'd been a Red Sox or a Cubs fan, but he had a special affinity for that Mets group. And yeah, there were some special players on that team. Nolan Ryan was there, and of course Seaver and Kuzman and all the greats throughout the lineup, and that's pretty good. And also the timing of it's October and not March when you're asking to play too. You touched on it a little bit, Corey, but. Tell us a little bit about, what drew you to Campbell and Buies Creek? Because you've told me in the past that you decided to come to Campbell even before you saw the place.
Yep. When he offered me the scholarship, and we didn't have a lot growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And, Coach came and sat at my kitchen table and said, this is what we could offer. And it was basically all financial aid, and whatever I didn't get in financial aid, I could get an athletic scholarship. And he said he wanted me to come pitch and that I probably could go ahead and start pitching right away as a freshman.
Mm-hmm.
So without a doubt, I said yes. Campbell offered so many things that I didn't know of at the time. First of all, a major league pitcher, somebody who would coach me. Secondly, beautiful weather, because in New Jersey, you played for 4 months out of the year and then it got cold and it was done. I would go play soccer to give me something to do. So when I came to Campbell and visited, I just fell in love with it, actually, I think I told you, me and my mom came down and we rode through Benson on Mule Day, the first time we ever came. And I looked at my mother and I said, Mom, what are we doing? She said, give this a chance. And we got here and just basically, 30 minutes after we got here, we loved it. And, just met some valuable people in my life from Campbell. And Campbell, I owe everything to Campbell. I met my wife here, Pam Davenport. She was 87 mm-hmm. graduate, just like you said. She was with your wife in a dorm your freshman year. I got to play pro ball because of Campbell University.
Mm-hmm.
Have 2 amazing children. Have a 4-year degree that I've had a wonderful career in education because of that. My mom and dad, before they passed, they actually moved down here to mm-hmm. Buies Creek. And worked for Buies Creek and Campbell University. There's nothing in my life that happens without saying Campbell University. And I think that's huge. Pam and I were talking the other day. She's probably gonna get mad at me saying this, but I think it's time that I'm getting ready to be 60 years old. I'm gonna go get my first tattoo. And I've already designed it, and it has something to do with Campbell University on it, because without Campbell, I don't know where I'm at today.
Wow. You had, and I believe it's a rare opportunity to be coached by not one, but two former big league pitchers during your college career. And let's not forget Darren Cloninger, your pitching coach for part of your career, reached Double A, and his dad was Tony Cloninger, who had a long pitching career from down near where you live now. Tell us a little bit about what it was like playing for Coach Kuntz, and then what you also learned from Coach Caldwell.
It was a 180 from Coach Kuntz to Coach Caldwell. Coach Kuntz was a disciplinarian. He liked structure. He taught a certain way. So when I got here, it was fastball over the top. He liked four-seam fastballs. He liked throwing set fastballs up in the strike zone. He liked overhand curveballs, 12 to 6. And he tried like cutting the ball. And that was good. And I was 5-1 as a freshman, threw a lot of innings, and had a lot of confidence in me. And I think that's what the big thing about Cal Kuntz was, is that he showed me the pitcher that I was, and it gave me the confidence to perform at this level. After he left after my sophomore year, Coach Caldwell comes in, left-hander. He threw sidearm just about. He cut the ball. He used Stick'Em on his body. He used Vaseline on his body. He just knew all the tricks in the trade. And he looked at me one day in the fall and said, I want to try a couple things with you. He said, I want to try to get you some more movement on your fastball. And I could throw it 90, but it was straight as an arrow. Mm-hmm. But I lived at 87 and with movement on it. So he dropped me down, started me throwing a slider, a circle change, mm-hmm. a fork ball. So I was learning different pitches and having success with it. But the most success I was having was with my fastball and the movement I was having on it. I always say, and Scotty Evans is a big, mm-hmm. me and Scotty talk about this all the time, is I'd much rather have a batter ground out the third base, a right-handed batter mm-hmm. ground out the third base, and a left-handed batter ground out the second base. Pitch the contact, do as little pitch as you can, and just let that sinker sink over the middle of the plate, let him try to hit it in the ground. So those two guys were so different, but both of them were so instrumental. And in my leadership later on in life, when I had to write papers about leadership, I used both guys, both of my coaches, to see the leader that I wanted to be, because I took bits and pieces from each person.
That's amazing. Corey, during your freshman year, Campbell defeated a first-year Radford program 38-0 in a game here at Old Taylor Field, where Jim Perry Stadium sits now. Your classmate, Henry Rochelle, like you, like Scott Evans, a multi-sport athlete in high school, and Henry was a two-way player from the get-go, and we'll get to your batting career basically in
that's
a little while,
that's
by the
important.
Way. And all pitchers usually want to talk about how good they can hit. But Henry set an NCAA record with 5 home runs that day. What are your thoughts when you think back to that game? What stands out from that day?
I remember it like it's just like yesterday. You know, Henry, a soft-spoken, great athlete, wasn't starting a lot at the time. We were all sitting on the bench just learning each other. Mm-hmm. And comes up that day and hits 1, hits 2, hits 3, hits 4, hits 5. And I can just see every ball still going over the fence, because I knew that Coach Kuntz was thinking about taking him out.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, we want him to hit. And just to celebrate it still, we celebrated it a couple weeks ago and get to see Henry and the guys from that team. And, you know, the big part is Henry's so humble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just a great guy. And he never gets too high, never gets too low. And it's just another day in his life, but to us, it's just one of the greatest days of our lives.
You, Scott, Henry came in were three key freshmen on that 1985 team that ended up, being three of the most important pitchers in the early stages of Campbell's Division I career. But also you came into a team that was loaded with power hitters. That team led the nation in home runs that game. You had Bill Wilkes and John Posey and those guys. That team won 32 games. And in fact, in your four-year career, you were part of three 30-win teams, and the other one finished 25-20, if some people want to nitpick and maybe say that wasn't the best. But what made those teams so good in the early days of the Big South Conference?
Coach Koontz knew how to recruit.
Mm-hmm.
He knew what he was doing. The talent that we had was unbelievable. And he let the people play. And there's not too many places back in the 80s that myself, Scotty, and Henry could get innings pitching as freshmen. The people that came to Campbell, it was just a close-knit team.
Mm-hmm.
We stayed together on weekends when everybody else went home. So we lived together like brothers from the time school started in August until it's time to go home in June. You know, so I think that had a lot to do. It's called chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And those teams had chemistry. And we all hung out together and did things together. Scotty and I and Henry, Barry Wilson, Kenny Milton, Eric Ellis, Vinny Mangino, Doug Barefoot, Lincoln Miller, and so on. We still have a text thread that every week, Sean Gleason, we're still texting every week to each other. Mm-hmm. You're on that text thread, Stan. So, you know, it's just a brotherhood that will continue to live forever.
Henry mentioned when I talked to him not too long ago that Bill Wilkes kind of took him under his wing from a position player. Henry was playing right field and was mainly a relief pitcher early on, but Bill kind of made him feel accepted, in which he felt was almost strange coming from a high school mentality where he had played football, basketball, baseball, and the seniors kind of kept their distance from the freshmen. Did you have were there any pitchers in the upperclassmen that kind of, made you feel welcome or showed you the ropes a little bit?
I'd say Marty Warren, Chuck Urban.
Right.
More so Marty. I played cards with him a lot. Doug Barefoot, who I still talk to. Doug was a sophomore when I was a freshman. We kind of had similar roles. We spot start sometimes. We'd come in relief sometimes. So those two guys would just offer their so-called expertise and what to do, how to work out, how to do things, and just good guys, people that I could look up to right now and just call their names out like that.
Marty, Warren, yourself, I looked up in the record books for the four seasons that you were here, nine of y'all went on to play. You and eight of your teammates went on to play affiliated professional baseball. Six of those guys like you were drafted. Randy Hood, who graduated in 1990, being the last to sign a pro contract of your college teammates. The facilities certain weren't the draw. What was the draw to come to this place?
Taylor Field was a great surface field. Would had a chain link fence around it and barbed wire and wood bleachers. And then half the year was used as a soccer field.
Mm-hmm.
The draw was, for me, as I said, was Cal Koontz and playing baseball all year round. And then when I got down here, how nice the people were.
Mm-hmm.
You come from the north down the south. It's a big change.
Sure.
Especially you come to, at that time, was a Southern Baptist school.
Right.
There was nothing like that in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
I never went to church when I was up in New Jersey. I remember going to see Dr. Stegall. Remember Dr. Mm-hmm. Stegall?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was. And going to him and say, I'm scared to death of these Religion 101 and 102 courses.
Right.
And he said, I'll help you. We'll get through this. And we did. So just to draw the people. Campbell is Campbell, and you know that, and everybody that's gone to Campbell knows that, and you don't know it until you get here.
Hey, Campbell fans, this is Braxton Harris, and I've got one question for you. Are you ready for game day? Well, get your game face on because Campbell's 2025 football season is here. We're bringing the energy, the grit, and the passion, and we want you to be right there with us. But hey, game day is just the beginning. You want to make a real impact? Then it's time to step up and join the Fighting Camel Club. Being a part of the Fighting Camel Club means you become the team behind the team, fueling scholarships, training, and academic success for not just our football athletes, but all 21 of our sports. When you join, you're not just a fan, you're a game changer. So what do you say, Camel Nation? Let's make a difference together. Join the Fighting Camel Club today and help us build champions on the field, in the classroom, and beyond.
And then to have those people here and to have that kind of team, and you played in the times before the Big South had an automatic qualifier to the NCAA tournament, but y'all faced NC State and Carolina and Clemson and Georgia and all these baseball powers. Who's the best college baseball hitter you ever faced?
The best I ever faced? You know, that's a great question. I'd be honest with you, I really don't know, but I can tell you who I faced in the pros.
Right.
Luis Gonzalez from the Arizona Diamondbacks, Royce Clayton.
Right.
Some of the ones that I faced. Mike Fiore I played with, Brian Jordan.
Right.
But Luis Gonzalez is probably the best hitter. Jeff Kent.
Right.
Luis Gonzalez, by far, I think, is the best hitter I ever faced.
Henry tells a B.J. Surhoff story. Of course, B.J. Surhoff was the number one pick in the draft in 1985, and a couple weeks after y'all had put the whip on Radford, Surhoff, he said, hit a one-hop single to him in right field that about tore his glove off, and he rounded first base, and he went back and asked Bill Wilkes, who was playing first base, he says, Where's the guy that hit all those home runs? And Bill Wilkes says, well, he's right out there. And he says, that little guy did, and always kind of take that. Of course, Surhoff and Weiss were on those Carolina teams. And so many of the, great, it was a great time for college baseball.
Our first game as a freshman was at Carolina. Bankhead, Surhoff, and Weiss were on the team for Carolina and played that night. Of course, I sat in the dugout all night long being the first game. Chuck Urban pitched and pitched well. We lost the game. I'll never forget it, but that's my first college baseball game.
And at least Bankhead and Surhoff had been on Team USA in the Olympics, correct?
Definitely.
With Mark McGuire and all of those. I can't recall Walt Weiss, but of course, Walt Weiss was a first-round draft pick. Scott Bankhead was a standout for the Royals later on pitching. That's pretty good company to keep in the same field.
Oh, without a doubt.
Corey, you capped your senior year with a Big South tournament title. Y'all had knocked on the door a couple of times before that, but it was a veteran bunch, juniors and senior laden. What do you remember about that run, that time?
I remember that back in 1988, we had six pitchers that basically was the staff that year that threw over 20 innings. Myself, Scotty Evans, Barry Wilson, Kenny Milton, Henry Rochelle, and then Chris Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
And we had those six pitchers could have gone to a regional and gone and done something with that. We had six live arms. Furthermore, we had hitters like Bobby Palanchar, Chris Mitta. We had Randy Hood.
Mm-hmm.
We had the team to do it. And I'll never forget the run. We had beaten everybody that year, beat Carolina twice, beat Georgia twice, mm-hmm. lost to South Carolina 2-1. That was, they were 15th in the country when we lost to them. And of course, Big South didn't have an automatic bid that year.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to the Big South tournament. Coastal Carolina's undefeated. I think it was Baptist. I think we played Baptist, but they were called something else.
It was Baptist College and now known as Charleston Southern University.
Yes, that's right. So we beat them in the first game. Scotty Evans pitches.
Mm-hmm.
Then we get the monster, Coastal Carolina, in the second game, and they're undefeated still. And this is to see who goes to the championship. And it's my number's called, and I go out there, and I'll never forget that game. I can tell you the entire game, but we won, I think, 6-5 in 10 innings. I pitched all 10 innings. Bobby Palanchar hit the tie-breaking home run in the bottom of the 10th inning to win the game. And then we go on to beat
Baptist, right?
17-0 in the championship game. I just remember that game for several reasons. It's like a redemption game, because I remember Bobby Pallinshaw having such a tough day at shortstop. Bobby was such a phenomenal shortstop, having a tough day, making some errors, and then coming back and hitting the home run in the 10th. But I'd walked the first two batters in the ninth inning, and Caldwell comes out to me, and he comes up to me and says, listen, I got Rochelle in the bullpen, but I don't want to take you out. I want you to finish this game. He said, can you finish it? I said, yeah, I want to finish it. So he walks back in the dugout. I want to say that we picked the guy off of second base, and the very next pitch, guy grounded into a double play, get out of the inning. And I go and throw 10 innings, which, of course, I probably threw 170 pitches in the game, which is unheard of today. And then the next day we go out and we're Big South champions, and we think that, you know, we've over 30 wins, beat everybody, beat Coastal Carolina, who was undefeated, and never get a bid to go to the regional.
Right.
And that was really deflating because of the team that we had. Beside my freshman year with Bill Wilkes and Posey and all them guys, I thought our senior team was the best team Campbell had ever had up until this latest edition of Campbell baseball.
Right. The next day, you mentioned Bob having his redemption by hitting the tie-breaking home run against Coastal. The next day, he goes 5-for-5, and you guys jump out to a 7-run lead after two innings. Barry throws a complete game. What do you remember about that? Was that almost too good to be true the next day? Or I mean, you still got to get 27 outs, right?
You're right. We celebrated the night before after the Coastal win. Yeah, we celebrated. We had a good time. We went out to dinner as a team. We had fun time. And if I'm not mistaken, that game the next day was like around 11 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, just the first guy got a hit, second guy got a hit, third guy got a hit, and just we rolled. And before we knew it, it was 7 or 8-0. And it just seemed like all the air, because Baptist had to play 3 or 4 games to get back to us.
Right.
And all the air had come out of them, and it was just, we were just waiting for that last out to be made, because Barry was just mowing everybody down that day. Yeah, he was unhittable.
Well, of course, tournament play, it's so important to stay in the winner's bracket, to preserve your pitching, and lots of times you'll see if there's a game on a double elimination tour, if you have to go to the second game of a championship series, it is all hands on deck, and there's going to be 7 or 8 pitching changes on both sides because everybody's just worn out.
And it worked out well for us because Scotty threw a complete game the first day. I threw a complete game the second day. Mm-hmm. And even if we happened to lose, we still had Henry, we still had Kenny, we still had Chris Wagner. So we were set up to do something. And that's why if we would have ever made a regional, we had actually the pitching to do that. And again, with all the great teams that Campbell's had, I don't think you could ever say you had 6 pitchers at one point that could go out there and shut anybody down.
Absolutely. I think I looked at the box score the other day from that opening game, and Scott pitched the first 5 innings and Kenny Milton came in. I think y'all won in 12 innings against Baptist because Kenny pitched 7 innings and only allowed 4 hits and 1 run and was the pitcher of record for that game. So to win 3 games, 2 of them going into extra innings and only to use 4 pitchers total is, you know, 21st century baseball fans, guess what? This is what it used to look like. And to have 2 guys, you know, 2 years later, Chris Wagner goes out and literally is the MVP of the Big South tournament and pitches Campbell to the conference championship. He wins the first round game over, then they were known as Charleston Southern or Baptist, and then comes back and beats Coastal in the championship game. So you had, you know, like you said, 6 really, really good arms in there. And Henry Rochelle, who still has the highest winning percentage of any Campbell pitcher on the Division I level, didn't even throw an inning in that 1988 team. That just shows you how good that staff was. So getting around to the most important part here, I want to make sure that everyone knows this. And this is something that Henry talks about, and this is something that Scotty talks about, and you are not averse to discussing as well. But you know, two-way players were a big deal. And you know, coming up, usually the best athletes on the team are a starting pitcher who happens to play shortstop on the when he's not playing or somewhere else, and he's a standout hitter, and then we've taken to making people make the decision to focus, unless your name's Shohei Ohtani, something like that. But Coach Caldwell allowed you and a couple of other pitchers to bat regularly, and you've appeared in 31 games, not as a pitcher, as your senior year. Folks, for the record, Corey Satterfield hit 303 that year, 4 home runs and 19 RBI in 31 games. Tell us about how that came about and the bullpen bombers or the Buies Creek bombers started.
It happened in the fall. We were playing inter squads, and Mike Caldwell would let his pitchers hit, just messing around.
Mm-hmm.
And I hit the ball rather well. I played shortstop in high school. I pitched mm-hmm. in high school. And then he started asking me one day to take ground balls at first base. So I did that. And I kept on hitting. I kept on hitting. I kept on hitting. And I'd actually go work at hitting more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And before I knew it, I'm playing first base on days I'm not pitching, or I'm DHing the mm-hmm. day after I pitch because he wanted to save me because I was probably sore the next day. And it just became a kind of a platoon between myself and Ricky Barrier,
mm-hmm.
My junior and senior year. And then I'll never forget it. We're playing Radford our senior year, and we're in extra innings, and we're fighting. We just got into a lull for about 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember David Snipes in the dugout, old sports information director, said something to the respect, "Boys, you better beat Radford. Y'all are not going to the tournament." And it got late, and Caldwell had made some switches, and he looked at me and says, "Can you play left field?" I said, "Well, I shag balls out. I've been shagging balls out there for 4 years. Why not go out there and play?" And we had him out second and third, two outs, and a left-handed hitter hits a sinking line drive to left field. And guess who it finds? It finds me, and I don't know how I catch it, but I make a shoestring catch. We go in, win the game the next day, that afternoon. That night, he gets us together and says, "We got a game at Wake Forest the next day, and Henry's pitching tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I only want to take 10 guys with me. Corey, will you play left field?" And I tell this story to Henry all the time. Henry pitches one of the greatest games I've ever seen
mm-hmm.
pitch. We win 2-1 against Wake Forest, and Wake Forest is ranked at that point. Mm-hmm. Well, the only run he gives up is because that left fielder out left field has a high pop fly back of the fence. I don't even put a glove on it. A run scores. And I come in, and I just said, "Sorry, Henry." And he just looked at me, put his head down, because, you know, Henry's not getting high or low. Mm-hmm. But I heard a lot of ribbon about that for years. I think that's the last time I played left field. So I think I went back to first base. But it was just that I hit the ball, and we needed some more offense, and I just thoroughly enjoyed it. That's one of the highlights of my college career is getting to hit, because I never hit in the pro, because when you got this A ball and rookie league ball and double A, they had DHs all the time.
Like so many people who've come through here, and it's not just Campbell. It's you go off, you move off, you're learning to become an adult. You're meeting a lot of people. A lot of people meet their spouse. You and Pam. How did you and Pam meet, and how did that start up?
She was a junior and I was a sophomore, and we just started kind of hanging out with everybody, you know. Mm-hmm. And I met her friends, and she met my friends, and she lived at the McKay House,
mm-hmm.
where your office is now. And one Saturday morning, we just went over there and started washing cars together. And we became really good friends. And before we knew it, we were dating. And then, right as I got drafted by the Cardinals, I spent my signing bonus on buying her an engagement ring.
Wow.
And in 89, we got married in Hamlet, North Carolina, mm-hmm. where she's from. And have two wonderful children, Taylor and Katie, have a great son-in-law, Cameron, and just blessed to have those folks in my life because of, again, possibly because of Campbell University.
Corey, for a Mets fan, October 25th, 1986 was a big night. Where were you and what do you remember about that night of Game 6 of that 1986 World Series?
I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, with Pam's uncle, and we were watching the game up in his TV room.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget calling my mother and saying, sorry, Mom, it didn't work out, because she was a big Met fan. And then, of course, Gary Carter gets a base hit in the bottom of the ninth inning, and then she starts screaming. And we hang up, and I call her back 30 minutes later after they win. But I was there in Charlotte, and I'll never forget it. And my favorite TV show is watching MLB when they have Mookie Wilson and Bill Buckner back on there talking to the Costas about that night. I'll never forget it.
Well, it was not Bill Buckner's favorite night, but that night for me, and I will take a little editorial license here. That's the night that Claudia and I met. We were at a party out in Coates, and somebody had a little TV in a barn out there. Eric Ellis happened to be there that night, but we didn't know him at the time. And we found some people. That's the night we met, and we've basically been together ever since that. And I'm positive that I did not see that the play where the ball went through Bill Buckner's legs, because Claudia and I were just sitting there talking and visiting and starting to get to know each other. And here we are almost, 38 and a half years later going on. So I didn't even put together that was the Game 6 night. I knew it was during the World Series, but until Claudia and I were talking about something, and we just Googled what happened on October 25th, 1986, a few months ago, and there it was. And so that's a big game for the Mets fans, a really big night for the Cole family.
Yeah. And you should be Mets fans now. See? You should be Mets fans.
Well, there's something about that. I grew up in Salisbury near Charlotte, and the Orioles were the closest American League team, and the Braves were the closest National League team, and the Braves were not very good in the early 70s and throughout the 70s. And the Orioles, of course, were the class of baseball from 66 through 83, basically. And so the Orioles were my AL team. The Pirates were my team that I pulled for after August because I liked Willie Stargell. And the Braves were the team I suffered with. But as I've grown older and as I've read more and learned more, and I think the greatest era of baseball is post-World War II, before the Giants and the Dodgers moved to the West Coast. With the integration of the major leagues, with the three teams in New York City. And so I've got a little soft spot for the Mets because of wearing the Dodger blue cap with the orange NY stitching like the Giants did. And, again, none of those teams were my favorite, but I think that's one of the most fascinating things that we learn about that. I do owe a debt of gratitude to the Mets, but I have a hard time thinking of them as being a fan of theirs, but I'm a fan of the game. And that is certainly one of the most notable things of the game. Corey, you touched on it a little bit, but your folks, Ken and Judy, moved to Buies Creek from New Jersey. When did they come down? While you were still in school here? Was that after? What was it that drew them to this place?
I graduated in June or May of 88. Got drafted in June. They moved down in 89.
Mm-hmm.
They both decided they wanted just to retire. Mm-hmm. And then Mom and Dad moved down here. They just loved Buies Creek. They would come down every weekend. My brother would take care of the store. They'd leave on Friday morning. Dad would drive all day long to get to the game that afternoon, stay Friday, Saturday, and then go home Sunday. And every home weekend that we were home, they did that. So they got to meet a lot of people down here. They got to be really good friends with Mr. and Mrs. Milton, Kenny's mom and dad, who is one of the greatest ladies I've ever met. And they just decided, something, we're going to move to North Carolina and Buies Creek and retire. Well, they didn't retire very long, because when they came down here, Mom went and worked at the admissions office with Dean Kerner.
Right.
And Dad worked in the maintenance department before seeing them. Mom passed in 01, and then Dad retired again. And they just made their, until they passed, they just loved Buies Creek and Campbell University.
Well, and your dad, back in the days before the internet and before being able to, you know, follow along in minor league baseball like you can daily through, you know, how whatever means you do electronically now, I started in June of 1989 in my position in communication sports information. And every time I saw your dad, he had the update on what you had done that year in Springfield in the Midwest League. And then when you were Corey's going to St. Peter's, I would run into him and your name was the first one that came up. And so he kind of kept me in touch with how you were progressing in your professional career.
He was a character.
Corey, the Cardinals picked you in the 26th round of the 1988 June draft. What are some of your best memories of playing pro ball?
They drafted me because I found out later that they were at that Coastal Carolina game that I pitched 10 innings.
Right.
Vern Benson was the guy that drafted me. And I asked him, I said, where did you see me? Because I thought the Pirates and the Yankees were looking at me. He said, we saw you the whole game at Coastal Carolina and we knew there that we were going to draft you. And I was like, wow. Some of the greatest moments, pitching in the Midwest League All-Star Game with the San Diego Chicken behind you, holding up pictures of girls in swimsuits. You know, getting to play with people like Brian Jordan and Turk Wendell. Playing against former teammates like Greg Cloninger. I played against Greg and when I was with Springfield and he was with Burlington Braves. And getting caught up with him that night, actually going out after the game and eating dinner together and just, you know, and bringing back memories of Campbell University and both of us are playing. He did get a base hit off me that night. But I did beat Turk Wendell 1-0 that night. So things like that, being in spring training, having lifelong friends with some players, great story. So we're in Hamilton, Ontario. It's the first year we're in rookie league and the living arrangements are brutal. Back there and when you were in the minor leagues, no money, no living arrangements, long bus rides. So I lived with four guys. And one of the guys was Steve Fanning. Steve was a shortstop, tall, lanky shortstop built just like me. And we had a terrible living arrangements and we met a family and they said, come live in our basement. So we had a couch, a king-size bed, and a chair down the basement. So we would rotate every night. Two guys in the king-size bed, one on the couch, one in the chair. So the moral of the story is I got to sleep with Steve Fanning in that king-size bed. Steve Fanning is the father of Dakota Fanning and Ella Fanning. And I still talk to Steve. Steve's a wonderful guy. And I still have a lot of friendships from the Cardinals. We go meet in Wisconsin, meet other places, go play golf. It's a lot of fun. So just those and meeting those people. Some games I remember pitching against the New York Mets, the Littlefield New York Mets, my first start ever. I pitched a complete game, 9 innings, one hitter, beat the Mets. Just things like that. Facing Luis Gonzalez, Royce Clayton, who was a 15-18 year major league all-star. I remember pitching in a double-A game in spring training, and I faced Tommy John.
Wow.
He was down on a rehab assignment right then, and he couldn't throw it through a side of a barn, but nobody could hit it. It was amazing sitting in that dugout watching him pitch. That was probably one of the highlights of my career, just watching him during spring training game.
A lot of folks now don't understand just how tough of an assignment was to be a, you know, you were a part-time, you were paid a part-time salary. You had a tiny per diem to eat on each day, during your time in the minors, because now so much money is tied up in sports and rookie contracts are so big and signing bonuses for, you know, top round picks are, you know, multi-million dollars. You know, I think you've shared a story with me in the past about what your per diem was in St. Petersburg for spring training.
You didn't get paid during spring training. you got a per diem. I think it was like 15, maybe $8 or $15 a day, something like that. So when you get to the clubhouse in the morning, because you had to be there at 7 o'clock mm-hmm. in the morning, they would have soup in St. Petersburg, Florida, might I add, and oranges. So you would eat soup and oranges when you got to the field house. And then when you left, because spring training, if you weren't playing, you were gone by 11 o'clock. So you had the whole day.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd take our $8 and we'd go to McDonald's or Burger King or something like that, eat something quick, maybe go to the beach, hang out, then get something for dinner, which you have $4 or $5 left, right. And you're going back to McDonald's or Burger King again.
Wow.
And then when the season starts, they're paying you $750 a month. Now they're paying when you're on the road, but when you're at home, you're paying your rent
mm-hmm.
that they found you a place to stay.
Sure.
And then they give you some per diem on the road, which is hardly nothing. So yes, if it wasn't for Pam Davenport Satterfield, because we had gotten married and she didn't come with me, she kept on working in Raleigh.
Right.
So with the credit card bills of her flying everywhere every other weekend to see me, it's a haul. It's a tough minor league baseball back in the 80s and 90s until recently, they've changed it, was not a good thing. The only good thing about playing minor league baseball was you got to play baseball.
Right. Corey, when your professional career came to a close, you got into education. How did that path come? Did you know that you wanted to get into teaching or coaching when you, after your playing career was done?
Playing with the Cardinals, you had to work some morning camps for kids. I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with teaching the game and being around kids. And when I got done, I just knew that that's what I wanted to do, but I needed to student teach because I couldn't student teach while I was at Campbell because I was playing baseball.
Right.
So I went back and did my student teaching at North Carolina Central University, mm-hmm. home of the Eagles.
Right.
And my first job was at Buies Creek Elementary School. I'd come right back to Campbell again. And then Matthews, mm-hmm. thank you, was the athletic director at Triton High School and offered me to come there. And I was a varsity assistant baseball coach and the varsity soccer coach and just fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
I had 3 great years there. And then Pam had the opportunity to go be the CFO of Richmond County Schools.
Mm-hmm.
And, Pam had followed me for 5-6 years now. Right. It was her time to do something. And so we left here, moved to Richmond County, and I became a PE teacher, driver's education teacher, coach, baseball coach, volleyball coach, basketball coach, mm-hmm. coached them all. And one day the superintendent came out to the playground where I'm out there with kids and said, I need for you to go back to school and become a principal. And I said, okay, what do you want me to do? He said, well, I'll pay for it. So the school system paid for me and about 5 other people to go back.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, I became an assistant principal at Richmond Senior High School. And after about, then I became principal at Ellerbe Middle School.
Mm-hmm.
And then superintendent called me to his office and said, I need for you to go out to Richmond Senior High School, which at that time was one of the biggest 4A high schools in North Carolina. Of course, the tradition of football and baseball.
Huge.
It's huge out there. Opening up that stadium on a Friday night is like opening up Carolina Panthers Stadium as you're focused on that because you'd have 7,000 or 8,000 people there. So I just fell in love with children, fell in love with teaching and coaching. And I think being a leader is you're teaching and coaching, you're guiding.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing that every day. And you're being good to people. And it just worked out well for me.
What are some of the skills, the leadership skills that you learned along the way, Corey?
I think, and I did this from principal of the year, minutes and meetings and so forth. I think you have to be a communicator. I think you have to be visible with people.
Mm-hmm.
I think you have to have non-negotiables. I think you have to stay to your goals and you have to have high expectations. And I think when people are doing their job, you leave them alone. You tell them, thank you for what you do. Keep on doing a great job and give them whatever they really need to do. Mm-hmm. And I think in public education, one of the bad things about it is that when people are not doing their job, nobody's helping them to do a better job
mm-hmm.
or helping them to find another job. And I think that's the downfall of public education is you don't have many leaders that want to make teaching or leaders better. You know, I can hire anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The mistake is not in hiring somebody. The mistake is not doing something about it when somebody's struggling and help and offering that help. Or if they're not taking the help, not finding a different path for them. And I think that's a lot a problem with public education now, is that you have people not doing a very good job, but they'll be telling them they're not doing a good job.
It seems there's so many parallels between coaching and teaching. It's, you know, a great coach will talk about being a teacher. Dean Smith, one of the greatest basketball coaches of all time, John Wooden, the same. They thought of themselves as teachers. They taught the game. And some of those great folks helped people learn life skills along the way. You went through, with a principal, then you became superintendent of schools in Scotland County, decided to retire, but you're not out of the education game. You ran for it and were elected to the Richmond County Board of Education. What do you do with the board, and what are some of the issues that y'all are trying to address and things you're trying to make better?
Well, it was one of those things where one day I said, Pam, I think I'm going to run for the Board of Education, and she looked at me like I had three eyes. And I ran and I won, but I ran because I wanted to make sure that Richmond County hired the best superintendent they could find.
Mm-hmm.
And not just give the job to somebody.
Right.
Because I think our community needed a really good superintendent. Our county also has very outdated schools built in the 50s, mm-hmm. probably sometimes like Harnett County does. Mm-hmm. And we need to have somebody in there, a superintendent, who is a forward thinker, somebody who will look down 10 years down the road and say, okay, this is what we need to be doing to build those new schools and have the initiative to get what's right for children. And so I ran on that basis. We hired a new superintendent. We are writing grants for new schools. And we're just trying to move Richmond County into a better place. And I love it. I thoroughly enjoy it. My term comes up next year. I am the chairman of the board now.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. I enjoy speaking to people. All my friends give me a hard time because they always say I'm a politician because I enjoy speaking to people. I have never met a stranger, and I want to live my life like that. I want to talk to everybody. I want to find out stories about people. Mm-hmm. It's so interesting, and everybody has a story, you know.
In addition to your duties with the Board of Education, you like to play a lot of golf. And I'd be amiss if I didn't ask, how's your golf game?
It is well. My wife thinks I play too much golf. But it's well. You and I had a chance to play a little bit today and play a couple holes, and had thoroughly enjoyed that. I actually shot my best score ever a week ago. I shot 70.
Wow.
I shot 2 under par. I had been at 72 several times, 71, but I could never get it below. But I did it a couple weeks ago. I'm playing, you know, 4 or 5 times a week. I have found that I do not want to be lazy in my retirement.
Mm-hmm.
That's another reason why I ran for the board. I have some rules for myself. I make sure I'm out of bed every morning before 8 o'clock. I make sure that I don't sit in my chair in my living room before 4:30, because if you get in that chair, you know it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're going to take a nap.
Mm-hmm.
So I have some rules, but I do not want to be lazy. I don't want to work, but I don't want to be lazy. You know, 30 years of public education is a lot,
mm-hmm.
especially when you were principal of a big 4A school for 7 years. Then you were assistant superintendent of human resources and auxiliary services and interim superintendent for 12 years. It's hard. It's hard work. And if anybody going into public education thinks, I'm just going to go teach, it's hard work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And that's, so I'm enjoying retirement.
So I have some certain questions I ask my friends who are into golf, or people who have played golf, or there are some folks. But so I was like, what's your favorite course that you've gotten to play so far?
I actually played TPC Sawgrass.
Mm-hmm. The stadium course?
Yeah.
Wow.
I played number 2, mm-hmm. walked it with a caddy, and that was probably one of my best experiences, because the other courses, you don't walk it, you ride it.
Right.
And I played the Bear Trap in PGA,
right.
which where my Uncle Lloyd lives now, and all the guys in the baseball team know who Uncle Lloyd is.
Yeah.
And so I go down there a lot, and we play the Bear Trap down there at the PGA. So those three courses I like. There are some courses that I really like in North Carolina, South Carolina, North Carolina. South Carolina, Sherrall State Park.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody's ever been down, right on the border, Sherrall State
right.
Park, it is a wonderful course, and I would tell anybody to go play it. And then the last one would be where Barry Wilson lives,
mm-hmm.
Mid-South.
Right.
Mid-South and Pinehurst is a great course, too.
What's the toughest course you've played?
The toughest course? It's a course that my uncle was a member of up in Westchester, New York, called Bonnie Brier.
Okay.
Hate that course. It's beautiful. I just never played well there. But the tough course, a lot of dog legs, a lot of hills, a lot of lifted greens, and just they have fescue up there. They don't have the Bermuda down
right.
here that we have. They have that thick, tough fescue grass, mm-hmm. which my club and myself did not like.
What's the course on your bucket list? Where do you want to play?
I want to do two things. I want to do Pebble Beach,
mm-hmm.
and I'd love to get some guys to go to Ireland and do like a 7-day trip where we walk seven different courses and just play golf, go to a pub, play golf, go to a pub, and do it for 7 days. That would be awesome. But Pebble Beach in the United States is where I want to go.
Are you able to put together your ideal foursome? And I'll let you make a fivesome if you've got four people plus you.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I would love to play golf with Tom Seaver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd love to play golf with Dan Marino, mm-hmm. Probably the greatest quarterback ever. Mm-hmm. And who would be the fourth one? Gosh, that's a really good question. Really, probably somebody like Gary Carter,
mm-hmm.
who is my mom's favorite baseball player, so I can go back one day and tell her, hey, Mom, me and Gary played golf together.
How about that?
You know.
Corey, you had a long playing, teaching, coaching career, administrative career. What advice would you give to a youth player who wants to try to compete at the college level?
They have to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that was one of my downfalls, is that back when I played, it was throwing, catching, running, and that was it. There was no lifting weights. There was no armbands. There was no weighted balls. It was nothing. I would tell these kids, if they really want to do something like that, they have to work. And nothing's going to be given to them. And the expectation is high. And work, 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 work. Because nobody is going to feel sorry for you when, you know, the going gets tough.
How about a piece of advice to one of these young people that are now playing at Campbell or any college, playing college athletics? What advice would you give to them now that they've reached that next step? What would you do that served you well?
You know, I would tell them to soak it up and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after I got done playing for Campbell, playing minor league ball, even though I was playing ball every day, was not the most enjoyable thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I would say enjoy it, work hard, build friendships, build lifelong friendships that, you know, you can go back in 30 and 40 years and go back and say, hey, Eric, how you doing? Hey, Eric, let's go to the Masters, because Eric Ellis and myself and Barry and Scotty just went to the Masters this year. You know, that's 40 years of friendships right there, and we go to the Masters together. How cool is that? So, you know, enjoy your teammates, work hard, enjoy every day that you have in this life.
Corey, you've recently been invited to join the Athletic Directors Advisory Board here at Campbell. What does that mean to you, and what are you in the board's goals?
You know, as I said, Campbell's offered me so much.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a way to give back. You know, I can give back by giving money, being part of the baseball club, or coming to ball games and talking to different people. But being on a committee with Hannah and Nate, and just trying to be a forward thinker about where Campbell Athletics needs to go and what improvements or what we need to do, I'm there for them. I will be a sponge. I will offer my my thoughts on things, and see where Campbell can go in the next 20 years, because from where they were with old Taylor Field and the soccer field at the baseball field to what it looks like now, if they can make that big jump and then keep going, you know, the sky's the limit for Campbell University and little old Buies Creek.
Finally, Corey, can you put into words how Campbell University and this Buies Creek community have impacted your life?
Wow. It's offered me to be sitting here with you today, Stan, retired at 60 years old, with a great career, with a great family, meeting so many different people. You know, we didn't even talk about the Miltons and what the Miltons, Kenny Milton and Miss Milton, mean to me, even though I don't get to see them much anymore. The place in my heart that I have for them. I lived with the Miltons after I got done Campbell University for about 6 months in between baseball seasons with the Cardinals. Judy just said, come live with us, because Pam was living in Raleigh and we weren't married yet. And just the goodness of people there. And, you know, when you talk about Campbell, the first people I think about really is Judy Milton and Kenny Milton. You know, and Kenny and I could go 6 months without talking, and we pick up the phone or text somebody. It's like we hadn't missed a beat. So it's just a good people, you know. It's just like you and Claudia, you know, and everything that's going on, and our families get to meet. You know, you got to meet Katie. It's just a Campbell University has a great way to bring things out in people that you really don't know is there.
I'm Stan Cole. And our guest today on Tales from the Creek has been former Campbell baseball star Corey Satterfield. Thank you, Corey, for sharing your Tales from the Creek.
Thanks, Stan. Had a great time.